Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're doing a Super Bowl pregame warm-up show. It's a prediction show. It's a symbolism analysis show. We're going to take a look at the occult symbolism of the 2024 Super Bowl Sports Ball Special. We're going to prepare you for what's coming February 11th, Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl LVIII. We're going to start by taking a look at the occult history of Las Vegas, from nuclear testing, opening up gateways for the aliens to come through. Martin Scorsese's already telling us about it. We're going to talk about Anton LaVey from the Church of Satan, his thoughts on television. We're going to talk about pop culture events transforming and perspiring as we speak. MIA, you remember her? I don't even know if she's a one-hit wonder, but she was at the Super Bowl before, dressed up as the black magician of Saturn. Remember, she gave the middle finger to the camera? She's making threats and claims about Jay-Z. And, yes, we're talking about Jay-Z today. He's Illuminate confirmed. He's going to do what thou wilt. With Roc Nation taking over the Super Bowl halftime performances for the last few years. We've even got a little bit of... We're going to talk about Griselda Blanco. Yes. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk about the dark history of Usher, his connections in with Diddy and Jamie Foxx and Justin Bieber and these parties he went to as a child. Herpes. Tattoo symbolism. And we're going to pick on Taylor Swift again. Why not? You know, I've been waiting. She's been in my sights for a long time. I've been waiting and watching. And it's my time to to really, really punch down on Taylor Swift. Occult symbolism, Illuminate confirm. A continuation from my Grammys show where we talked about Taylor Swift. I've got more. We're going to make some predictions before this episode's over. This is going to be quite a show, folks. I'm going to make some predictions. And, yeah, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast because Monday I'm coming back. Now, look, every year we do a pregame show and then a postgame analysis. That's kind of been the thing I've been doing for all these years. And here's the schedule for this year, folks. Supporters, you know who you are. You're on the patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. You're maybe in the IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section, or you mash that button real easy and you're in the Apple Premium section. Those are the three supporter feeds. You guys get all the hundreds of bonus episodes that I'm doing constantly. You are getting ad-free experience, and you're getting the early access. So this year, because sometimes when these big mega events happen, I can't do early access, but here's what we're going to do. Supporters are getting the pregame show early as usual. I'm going to publish this, if I'm doing it correctly, Friday, February 9th. All right? I'm recording it Thursday, February 8th. Now, you free feed losers, you're going to have to wait until Monday, all right? I'm sorry. You're going to have to wait till Monday to get the pregame. Just another perk for my supporters. You know, the supporters are what keeps the show alive. I'll be frank with you. If I didn't have any supporters, I wouldn't exist. There is no Isaac Weishaupt online. There is no Isaac Weishaupt podcast. It doesn't exist. So I have to give my best to the people that are willing to buy me less than one cup of coffee. You know, year for years, all these supporters say, oh, buy me a cup of coffee. And I always thought that was silly. Now, to subscribe for a month is literally the cost of one cup of coffee. A brewed coffee, black coffee, is almost $4 now. So, come on. So, supporters get the best of me. And the free feed losers, well, they lose. And I know people hate it when I say that. And I'm of course, joking. This is me employing, I'm an old guy, 80s wrestling heels, where Ravishing Rick Rude used to get up on the squared circle and tell all the husbands, he's like, I need all you fat, lazy, disgusting men to sit down while I entertain your ladies. And then he would, not only would he call the guys fat and lazy and disgusting. Then he would take one of them from the crowd and bring him up on stage and smooch him down on the in the squared circle. You couldn't do that today. This is a softer world that we live in, okay? Anyway, so supporters, you're getting the pregame show early as intended. Then on Monday, I'm dropping the Sunday night, I'll be dropping the Super Bowl post-game analysis on the supporter feeds. Then Monday, all the free feed losers get both of those shows, okay? Just the way it's going to work. Now, let's talk about Las Vegas, the occults. Who's with me? I know half of you's like, F this guy. I'm out of here. That's all right. It's fine. Trust me. The Las Vegas city is one of my favorite cities on this whole planet. I've been to Las Vegas more than any other city outside of, you know, my home city here. Outside of like Salt Lake City or my beautiful hometowns in PA there. I've been to Las Vegas more than any other place by far. All right. It's a great city. It's really expensive right now. I don't love that, but hey. But Las Vegas is Illuminate confirmed. It's basically out there in the Mojave Desert, which is where Jack Parsons did the Babylon working rituals, where he manifested Marjorie Cameron into his life, and he was going to create the Moonchild to kill us all. Although it's believed that he did his rituals out in Southern California, which is very, you know, close to Las Vegas. But nonetheless, the desert of the Mojave Desert is the place of initiation for occultists. I talked about this in more detail in an analysis I did on The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, who was influenced by Aleister Crowley. You can get that on Audible and Amazon. It's in a compilation book I wrote called Alice in Rocky Horrorland. If you think about it, you can figure out what topics I cover there. But the desert is, of course, where the initiations happen. So why not the city in the middle of the desert to initiate the world's largest audience of television viewing events? Look, I know someone on my Patreon, they said, Isaac, no, it's not the Super Bowl. It's FIFA World Cup. Sure. I'm an American speaking from an American perspective. And I tell you, ain't no Americans watching soccer. We're watching football, all right? And I can talk like that because this is the year that I started watching football again. It's been 20-some years. I haven't watched it. And this year I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm watching it again, and I enjoy it, and I love it. So technically, I think it's the second most watched sporting event. But in America, NFL football is the king, right? We talked about that on a show I did last week about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. I had the stats on there. Something about the ratings. The NFL by far blows away the ratings of any show that exists. So let's talk about Las Vegas. The LDS were one of the first communities to set up shop there in Las Vegas. Well, second, I mean, if you consider the Native Americans who were there first, then a guy named John Fremont, which is what Fremont Street is named after. But the LDS, they set up a fort there, right? The Mormons. And of course, the LDS, they've got all these occult ties to Freemasonry, magic rituals. That's what Joseph Smith was doing when he was channeling Nephi or whatever alien, Moroni. That's what Moroni out in New York. He was channeling aliens out there doing his old rituals. For more on that, John, I did a show, a two-hour discussion with Jordan from Wind and Sea Coffee on John Dee. That's where the root of this thing goes to, is in the Enochian language of John Dee. And I'll put links in the show notes. I'm going to reference a lot of shows because I don't have time to go through all this right now. I need you guys to catch up with me, all right? So Las Vegas is where near the Nevada test site, all right? This is where the U.S. was testing atomic weapons for a long time. The people that were living in Las Vegas in the 1950s could see the mushroom clouds of these atomic bombs blowing off, and it gave residents tons of cancer, and it blew all over the place. There was fallout all the way into St. George, Utah. That's what killed the Duke, John Wayne, died from cancer on the set of Genghis Khan. I think like half the people that were working the Genghis Khan movie in St. George died of some kind of cancer. So they used to test all these atomic weapons out there for decades. And then finally, you know, the liberal hippie types, had enough. They protested, and the government was like, fine, I guess we'll stop bombarding you with cancer. Jeez, you know. But the point is, the atomic testing, the atomic bombs, the occult theory is that it's opening doorways. It's thinning the veil. It's breaking open and allowing entities to come through. That's why we had the Trinity crash in 1945, right after the Trinity testing in New Mexico. That's why we had Roswell in 1947. And then Jack Parsons, of course, working the Babylon workings during this time period. Like, he knew, right? He was, of course, plugged into JPL. He was very well aware of these things, I'm sure. And if you're not familiar with the Trinity crash, if you thought the Roswell crash was crazy, wait till you hear about the Trinity crash, all right? And I interviewed Paulo Harris. She and Jacques Vallée wrote a book about it that I actually looked up on Amazon. I think they're sold out because the paperbacks were going for like $50 or something. Luckily, I got one. Anyways, I interviewed her last year. I'll put the link in the show notes to that as well. That's, if you want to hear about UFO crashes, that one will blow your mind. Now, the second atomic test, so the first atomic test was at Trinity in New Mexico. Then the second one was at Bikini Atoll out in the Pacific, and this was called the Operation Crossroads. Now, that's a very curious name. If you follow me for some time, you already know the story of Robert Johnson, the blues singer who sold his soul to the devil. It was supported by his own friends who said, yeah, that really happened. And where did he do it? At the Crossroads. The Crossroads is where these folks go to make the deal with Satan, the Faustian bargain. And why do I jump straight to Satanism? Well, it's because the Collins elite would appreciate that. The Collins elite were a group of folks with the Pentagon that were researching all these UFO crashes in the 40s and 50s and 60s, allegedly all the way till recently. And they kept warning the Pentagon, you shouldn't be messing with the UFO stuff and this technology because you're actually, you know, letting demons through and making deals with Satan. It's a very Christian perspective. And you can hear, and I talk about this in my UFO books that I published in 20 and 21, that the Collins elite, you can hear people like Lou Elizondo talk about how, yeah, there was these people in the Pentagon and they were worried we were going to summon the devil and, oh, they're crazy and they're all dead now, thank God, now we can keep doing this stuff. So when I tell you there's a spiritual battle happening, I believe it. And that's not me just coming up with it because I'm overzealous Christian or some kind. It's what it is. Anyways, and they did Operation Crossroads, and they decided, you know what, let's just move to Nevada. So they've detonated something like 1,000 atomic bombs out here in Nevada near Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is also where the infamous Janet Airlines picks up people to take them into Area 51, which you already know the history of that. Bob Lazar said they were reverse engineering UFO craft there. I actually believe Bob Lazar. You can drive up to the gates of Area 51. I did this with Jimmy the Jackhammer years ago. I recorded a little video documentary of sorts, a very low budget one, as is huge for me. I think you can find it on my, I think it's on my, one of my YouTube, I float through two different YouTube channels, at Occult Symbolism, I think is the one it's under. But you head towards Rachel, Nevada from Las Vegas, and the highway you take is Highway 93. 93, if you're into the occult, you know that Aleister Crowley had a religion called Thelema based upon an entity, an alien that talked to him, of course, that he later said was the devil. But Crowley had a philosophy of Thelema, this religion, and 93 is a shorthand way of referencing their motto, their dogma, all that stuff. Specifically, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law is summated as 93. He would sign his letters 93 Crowley or whatever. And you know, you've seen this on Jay-Z's hoodie that he wore on the behind the scenes for the We Run This Town music video, which allegedly used the language of the Order of Nine Angles, a satanic occult magician group, which they were in the news not too long ago. I was preparing a show for it, but I don't have enough time to keep up with everything. Because I did two shows about the Order of Nine Angles. And then, sure enough, they were in the news for, you know, murdering and stuff. But yeah, Jay-Z, this is the guy in charge of the halftime Super Bowl show now with Roc Nation. The guy who is endorsing Aleister Crowley ideas with that hoodie, Do What Thou Wilt. And Las Vegas, of course, was the home of the very mysterious 2017 shooting. We don't need to go into details on that, but that story didn't add up exactly. Do they still know why Homeboy did that? We don't know. And then, of course, you got the Hoover Dam right next to it, supplying the electricity. I did 3 episodes in the last 6 months on the occult symbolism of the Hoover Dam. I'll put the link in the show notes if you want to catch up to that. But they say it's the throne of Satan, and there's allegedly satanic rituals that happen near there. It's a whole thing. So, yes, Las Vegas is Illuminati confirmed. And it's the reason it's Illuminati confirmed is because of all these ideas of the desert and UFOs and channeling entities through the nuclear testing. So how shocked was I when I already saw one commercial from the Super Bowl this year? Martin Scorsese, one of my favorites, had a Squarespace commercial where UFOs are revealed to the public. They show up, but everyone's addicted to their phone and their devices, and they don't care about the aliens, which is a commentary on how we have congressional hearings. And I don't know, you know, I've been talking about the phenomenon of aliens for a long time. I don't know if it's that people are distracted or if it's that people don't trust these people coming out and talking. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about it. I think, yeah, okay, we got these intelligence guys who've been lying to us and disinformationing us for decades, telling us, oh yeah, there's aliens. I want the proof, man. Give me the proof. Give me the evidence. And until then, I don't trust none of you hoes that are talking right now. You know what I mean? Oh, really? Anyway, don't get me going on this. But we already saw one commercial talking about UFOs. Because, of course, that's the agenda, is to pave the way for the occult experience of the UFOs and aliens. And look, I'm open to the ideas of aliens and UFOs and entities from other dimensions. My concern is them using that idea against us. Because I think if you believe in angels and demons, you can easily believe in aliens. Ultra-terrestrial theory. But yeah, Scorsese, he's on his iPad. And I think what the commercial shows us is that this is what's fascinating. They show him as a child watching the TV in the 1950s with UFOs invading as black stars of all things with all seeing eyes in the center. And I don't know if that's a pop culture reference to the 50s. I've never seen it before. I think, what kind of aliens is that? A black pentagram with an all seeing eye in the center? That's about as occult of an image as one can come up with. So he sees it as a kid, and then decades later, he's an adult, and that's what he sees when he sees the aliens. And this is exactly what, you know, I was talking about in my alien books. They program us through entertainment to see and experience aliens, and that's how they will manifest to us. It's a quantum subjective experience, and that's why I titled my 2 alien books, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, because that's what we're doing, all right? Has a lot to do with the observer effect, cognitive modeling. Basically, and you hear James Grush, the whistleblower guy, which, again, I don't know the guy. I don't know if he's telling the truth or not. He was an intelligence guy, so I automatically am suspicious. But he said there's a quantum aspect to this thing. And then Representative Luna reiterated that just the other day. And that was what I was freaking out when I did a show about the whistleblower testimony. I said, did anybody catch it? He's talking about quantum physics stuff. Because the quantum stuff ties into the occult sciences. And again, not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that that's what it is. Then on top of all that, this is the year of the dragon. An ancient alien theory tells us that dragons are merely UFOs because the ancient cultures didn't have the technological reference to understand what they were looking at, so they called them dragons. Now, shout out to James over there at ESPN 680. I've done a couple shows with him. And he told me that MIA or Maya, I don't know how you pronounce her name. Look, you know me, I'm a hater, right? I dislike everybody, and she's not exempt. I couldn't tell you one song she sings. I think she's on that that Paper Plane song or whatever that was. That song was fire, right? Great beat. But other than that, like, she's a one-hit wonder to me. But she's this famous musician, and she's on Twitter freaking out because apparently she's trying to get a visa to come to America to see her child or daughter, I guess. And she's trying to do it the legal way, which I respect. And she's crying about Joe Biden letting the illegals cross the border, which I actually just watched 60 Minutes, and it's wild, man. There's a whole defense. There's a million Chinese people coming through. Chinese people! And look, I don't know the answer to the immigration crisis. I think everyone should abide by the law. I don't think you just have an open border, let anybody and everybody come through. That's pretty crazy. Anyway, I don't want to get political about this because I don't know all the ins and outs about the topics. You know, I'm a humanitarian guy. I love human beings. And, you know, and in America, we have a weird system here. We have this capitalist system. Yet, if you understand how the factory farms work, like if you read Fast Food Nation, they talk about how they have tons of illegals from Mexico that come in and work. And Mexicans are the hardest working people I've ever met in my life. Shoot, man. I say, if they want to work here, bring it on, man. Because these people work. And you've got illegals working the farms, and all of our food comes from illegal immigrants, you know, working. Anyway, I don't want to get political, but it's an issue, right? And I don't know what the answer is, and I don't know the ins and outs of pros and cons of what it's all about, but Maya's going off about it, all right? I'm going to read you some of her tweets. I'm going to paraphrase because I don't want to say, because this is pages and pages, like insane amount of tweeting. She says, "I'm not allowed to see my kid for stealing food at 18 when I was poor, yet your government is okay with my child being with a family convicted for child trafficking and sex cults." Then she says, "I've shown support for Julian for 14 years, I'm assuming Julian Assange, and I've been to the U.S. many times. The only difference is I called for a ceasefire and spoke out against genocide and ethnic cleansing. Now I'm forced to pick between my child and speaking up for what's right." Then she says, "My first custody battle was 2013. My child was 4. I was managed by Jay-Z, who ultimately was paid by Bronfman's. And now I perk up because Bronfman's, of course, tied to the Nexium sex cult, also behind Death Row Records. If you read Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, I talked about the hip-hop conspiracy world, and the Bronfman's from and Seagram's is behind Death Row Records. Then she says, "Sacrificed my career for my child. They ripped me off and copied my style and gave it to their puppets and shadow banned me on every platform." Then she says, "Hillary Clinton gave Sarah Bronfman Gaddafi's oil fields after killing him." I don't know anything about that. I got to look that up. That's interesting. "I was punished for saying he helped Africa. Then they tried to send my child to one of her schools. When I went to visit the school, the children looked dozy and drugged, and I couldn't tell why." All right, geez. "The day I was served," this is in all caps, by the way. I should be screaming this, apparently. "The day I was served for my child, Roc Nation stopped all communication with me. And all my emails to Jay-Z asking for help was wiped from my inbox. I was trapped in Brooklyn. I had sex in Texas once in 2008. I wish my fight for my child was just with a random dad and not the entire cesspool of the U.S. government and all global banking institutions and now Israel's war and military industrial complex and a bunch of pedos." Wow. She's going off. Remember when she was on her Super Bowl, then she gave us the finger wearing her Black's attorney and death robe with, what's his name, CeeLo Green and Madonna. My precious Madonna. I grew up with Madonna. I loved Madonna. But she's Illuminati confirmed, folks. And I'm here to tell you, like, that's the trick with these celebrities and stuff, man. I don't think you need to not listen to it. Madonna's music means something to me that Madonna doesn't represent herself. And that's okay. That's okay. I think Open Your Heart was probably the greatest song ever in the history of music. But Madonna's Illuminate confirmed. She was, remember, she was screaming about fried fish in the bathtub during 2020. Oh, that's what's going on with Madonna. It's all right. But yeah, she dressed up as ISIS, the Black Madonna, at the Super Bowl. Again, high profile mass ritual. Then she starts talking about stabbies and how it's the year of the dragon and she's ready to slay dragons. So I don't know what's going on with Maya, something though, right? Then Joe Buck, he's a sports ball guy. He said something bad is going to happen in Las Vegas. He said, there's going to be some story. There's going to be something that happens because it's Vegas and it won't stay in Vegas. It's going to be a big something that happens. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. I just think that is going to be a mess in my mind. Because he said he's not going. Is there going to be a UFO invasion? Is there going to be a satanic ritual that the energy from the crowd is going to perpetuate or something? I don't know. Because every year, because the Super Bowl is the high profile ritual. Every single year I talk about this, you could probably, I'm not going to harp on it too long this year because every year I do it. You can listen to any one of my Super Bowl shows and I talk about it for a long time. The short version is that this year it costs $7 million to have a 30-second commercial, all right? Big bucks. This year, Taylor Swift is there, so there's supposed to be this increased female viewership, all right? Which I don't know if I believe that. I don't know of a woman out there who, if she's not into football, is like, yeah, I'm going to watch a four-hour game in case they show Taylor Swift once every 30 minutes or whatever. But whatever. So apparently they're planning on selling more makeup products and female products. And I would think if I was the NFL, females are the holy grail because then you can double your audience. Because I assume it's predominantly a male audience. But that's where that pink, you want to talk conspiracies. Capitalism is the biggest conspiracy of all. There's the pink tax where they charge, you know, they'll make a razor a pink and then they'll charge you more for it when it's the identical same razor. Higher costs for females, apparently. Now, last year, there was this sports gambling app called FanDuel, and they had a thing called the Kick of Destiny, where people would bet on whether or not Gronk could kick a field goal. And this year, they were planning on doing it again, and the commercial for it, promoting it, had the late, great Carl Weathers betting for Gronk making the field goal and John Cena betting against. Carl Weathers just died February 1st, a occult holiday, a satanic holiday of Imbolc, of blood sacrifice. Now, was Carl Weathers murdered by the Illuminati? Is he Illuminati confirmed? No. We're not going to talk bad about Carl Weathers, all right? He died peacefully in his sleep because he's an angel. He was Oakland Raider Nation. He starred in Rocky and Predator. So we're not talking bad about him. And he was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, by the way. Anyway, so the idea is that commercials are energy harvesters. And they are conducting magic. And I know when you think magic, you're thinking Harry Potter with magic wands and people standing in robes. Like, that's not what this is. This is alchemy, converting energy into wealth, into money. And the money produces power and freedom. But don't listen to me. Let's listen to Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan. He has a book called The Devil's Notebook. And I'm going to read to you from it. All right, let's go. Quote, "The birth of TV was a magical event, foreshadowing its satanic significance. The first commercial broadcast was aired on Valpurgis Night, April 30th, 1939, at the New York World's Fair. Since then, TV's infiltration has been so gradual, so complete, that no one even noticed. People don't need to go to church anymore. They get their morality plays on television. What began modestly as rabbit ears on top of family TV sets are now satellite dishes and antennas pridefully dominating the skyline, replacing crosses on top of churches." Which, by the way, I mean, let's talk about how football owns a day of the week, the same day that the churches are supposed to own, Sunday. The TV set or satanic family altar has grown more elaborate since the early 50s, from the tiny fuzzy screen to huge entertainment centers covering entire walls with several TV monitors. What started as an innocent respite from everyday life has become in itself a replacement for real life for millions, a major religion of the masses. The consumer society in which we now live is an extension of the society once governed by religion for many centuries. Instead of obeying the Holy Bible, right or wrong, TV advertising now instructs what to buy and what not to buy. Atheism wasn't tolerated when scriptural dictates were in fashion and accepted as the word. Now, thanks to satanic infiltration, it's safe to say, I don't believe in God. But modern heresy, not conforming to a television lifestyle, not accepting television truths, is liable to be punished with as much rigorous enthusiasm as ever. The clergy of the TV religion are those entertainers, newscasters in particular, who nightly spread the word from their cathode ray pulpit. The network newscasters are the high priests and priestesses of Satanism, bending the minds of viewers to the requirements of consumer marketing. The local newscasters are the parish priests, ribbing and emoting over the latest local tragedies. Celebrities, whether local or national, are all part of the hierarchy of church, men of the cloth. There should be no complaint regarding network high priests arriving to report on scenes of devastation in white stretch limos. After all, they are royalty in the church and should be accorded the same privileges as a visiting cardinal or archbishop. Wow, Anton LaVey coming with the heat, you know? I mean, you can't disagree with a guy on that. I think he's on the money with that, right? With entertainment, and we worship these celebrities as gods and goddesses. That's why Taylor Swift is being put on this pedestal and being so obsessed over. She is the goddess that needs to be there to bring in the energy. We must all bow down and worship. And there's a, what did he say here? He says, bending the minds of viewers to the requirements of consumer marketing. And that's a fact, man. Why do you think they're paying $7 million for 30 seconds? Because there's a lot of people watching and there's a lot of energy out there. The reason you do that is because you could take $7 million and alchemically turn it into $20 million or whatever. You know what I mean? So now you can see why the magician, Jay-Z, who wore a shirt, and if you look at the episode shown, the episode artwork, there's an image of Jay-Z wearing a shirt that says, "This is black magic." As well as his Do What Thou Wilt hoodie, right? This is why Jay-Z wants in on this action. So let's talk about Jay-Z and Roc Nation. He started Roc Nation in 2008. It's this multi-conglomerate. You know, it's like all these social medias. Now they all do everything. It's a record label, athlete management, media production, TV film, clothing, etc. The first artist they signed was J. Cole. And Roc Nation was the successor to Rockefeller Records, right? And Rockefeller was, of course, named after who? Rockefeller, the John D. Rockefeller, one of the Illuminati bloodlines. And one of the Rockefellers, I don't remember his name, he had the UFO, what do you call it? The UFO initiative. That's it. Oh, I can't think of the word. The UFO initiative. He was trying to get UFOs to be accepted by the masses back in the 90s with Clinton. And there's a branch of Roc Nation called 360, which, you know, it's like a 360 deal, meaning you sign these artists and they're locked in for life. Everything they do is scrutinized. But the 360s grabs my mind. It's called 360, like 36 Mafia. But we recall that Jay-Z was put in charge of the Super Bowl halftime shows back in 2019 after Roc Nation made this deal with NFL. And his Roc Nation label, interesting idea here I'm going to talk about. The CEO of Roc Nation is a woman named Desiree Perez, who was appointed as to that position in 2009, almost immediately. Now, what's really fascinating to me, and you can look this for yourself, tell me if I'm wrong, she does not have a Wikipedia page. Most of the CEOs of these big companies have Wikipedia pages, so I just think, how does that happen? How much money or influence does it take to make sure she doesn't have a Wikipedia page? And I know a lot of people, they condemn Wikipedia, and I get it. This is a good example. Why? Why is this not a thing? And you're probably thinking, well, either, so what? A person doesn't have a Wikipedia page? Big deal. I'm going to read you from Variety's website here. An article talking about Desiree Perez, because I was trying to figure out who she was. It says, she oversees the careers of artists. Wait, no, they're talking about Roc Nation here, okay? Roc Nation oversees the careers of artists, including Rihanna, Mariah Carey, Alicia Keys, Shakira, J. Cole, Big Sean, Megan Thee Stallion, and many others, along with multiple successful athletes, and programs the Super Bowl halftime show and other aspects of the NFL's entertainment. It's no coincidence that last year's halftime performers were Shakira and longtime friend of Roc, Jennifer Lopez. And also, by the way, it was then Rihanna and then Usher, which are, you know, tied into Jay-Z. I'm going to keep reading from Variety, not my words, Variety's website. And Perez's past offenses are among the less notorious in Trump's extremely long list of executive pardons and commutations. Also, Trump gave her a pardon for what, you may ask? After her 1994 arrest for conspiracy with intent to distribute narcotics, Perez cooperated with the U.S. Attorney's Office and received a sentence of 5 years probation. Among other offenses, she was later charged with parole violation and served 9 months in prison in 1999. Huh. Isn't that something? Imagine getting arrested for conspiracy with intent to distribute narcotics and walking away with just 5 years probation. What kind of information would you be giving up? I don't know. She's tied into somebody somewhere with some information. And I thought, well, that's interesting. What's the arrest about? So they have a hyperlink. And the Variety article links to the New York Daily News about the arrest. You can still read the URL has the full name of the headline. I forget what it is. Something about, you know, Desiree Perez arrested, blah, blah, blah. But when you click it, you get the oops 404 page. So they took the article down. The New York Daily News took it down. So the New York Daily News has an article that's gone. Wikipedia doesn't have any information. That's strange. I guess we'll stick with the Variety article here. It goes on to talk about theories about how all this stuff was set up, suggesting that Van Jones, who's apparently also under Roc Nation somehow. I know Jay-Z was like Van Jones' first guest when Van Jones had a show on, I think it was CNN. But Van Jones, who, you know, liberal dude from CNN, dislikes Trump, yet is somehow friends with Trump because of through Kushner, Van Jones allegedly was able to convince Trump to pardon Desiree Perez. And it suggests that this pardon was part of the reason that Roc Nation artists weren't campaigning in 2020 for the Democrats as hard as like Jay-Z and Beyonce were. Remember, they were really campaigning for Obama back in the day. But I'm still confused. Like, why? Like, what's the pardon about? She's not even in prison. Who cares? Like, what's the big deal? Let's keep reading from Variety. Why is a pardon important for Perez, who's already reached the upper ranks in the business? Insiders point to global ambitions for the executive, who was promoted from COO to CEO of Roc Nation in December 2019. Okay, I misspoke earlier. Sorry. She's now the CEO, though. As well as the company's ambitions to move into businesses like cannabis. Jay-Z recently launched a brand called Monogram and Spirits. As a quote, as a convicted felon, there are certain things you can't do, like run a public company, offers the source. That may have been holding Roc Nation back. Okay. Well, here's where things get interesting. Because I really, you know, she got arrested for, let's read that again. Conspiracy with intent to distribute narcotics. What are we talking about? Are we talking about selling weed? We don't know. Because there's no Wikipedia, right? Well, let's now take a look at a new Netflix show called Griselda, starring Sofia Vergara, and she plays the role of Griselda Blanco. I watched the first episode. It's pretty good. And they describe Griselda Blanco, who does have a Wikipedia, excuse me. It says, known as the Black Widow or Cocaine Godmother, She was a Colombian drug lord who was prominent in the cocaine-based drug trade and underworld of Miami during the 1970s through the 2000s, and who has also been claimed by some to have been part of the Medellin cartel. That's Pablo Escobar's crew. In fact, the show starts out with a quote from Pablo. I think it says, "I've only been afraid of one man, and her name is Griselda Blanco." I thought, man, this is pretty rough. But now here's where things get really weird. The internet rumor, I want to make sure you hear me, it's a rumor, allegedly, no facts to support this, is that Desiree Perez, CEO of Roc Nation, used to traffic for Griselda, and then she became an informant. And now, the reason I think this is weird, and I'm even bringing it up, is that the internet has been virtually scrubbed of any information on this. I mean, you can, if you look it up, you see some TikToks, some unsubstantiated rumors, and I'm trying to fact check it because I'm not trying to say anything that's not true. So I don't know. That's the rumor, and I have no way of knowing true or false because I can't find any of this information online, which just adds to the strangeness of it, right? But the reason I'm bringing this up, I'm not trying to pick on Desiree Perez. Look, I appreciate anyone who's trying to go the straight and narrow path. Even if she was trafficking for Griselda, like, that speaks volumes that you would be able to go straight and like take a legal path. Like, that's beautiful, right? So I don't look for that as a way of being to try to condemn her. I actually would respect that a lot. But the whole idea I'm bringing up is that Jay-Z, he's got a lot of strange allegations and things get murky sometimes. Dame Dash constantly is alluding to things, but not specifically calling it out. And he's a very powerful man, Jay-Z is. And now, because he runs Roc Nation, or I don't know if he runs it, but he's the owner, I guess. He's now in charge of the biggest symbolism ritual of the year at the Super Bowl. So let's see what happens, right? Now let's talk about Usher. I know you're probably thinking, geez, Usher's the halftime show. What about him? Let's talk about him. It says his history. He's been working since he was a child to become an entertainer. Very talented, obviously. He was on Star Search, if you remember that. I think it was Ed McMahon, wasn't it? He got signed by Ellie Reed at 13 years old. And Wikipedia says that he hit puberty right after he got signed. So Ellie Reed sent him up to hang out with Diddy in 1994. I thought that was kind of odd. Supposedly because he couldn't figure out how to get his vocals adjusted in. So I guess Puff Daddy's a voice coach now? I don't know. That's just what it says. So anyways, Usher goes up to Puff Daddy and attends Flavor Camp. Usher then, that same year, releases his first album. Apparently, he got his voice figured out, I guess, which has all these R&B sex tracks. But mind you, he's 15 years old at this point. Kind of odd to have a 15-year-old singing about sex, right? But then at some point after this, Usher buddies up with Jermaine Dupri, who also has a bunch of nasty rumors about things that allegedly may have happened with Criss Cross. Kai Williams was talking about this, but it's been a very well-known conspiracy for many years in the hip-hop community. Anyhow, Usher finally blows up with Jermaine Dupri in 1997 with You Make Me Wanna. And the rest is history, right? Now, Usher dated Chili from TLC, then allegedly Naomi Campbell, Mrs. Epstein Island herself. Around 2007, Usher landed Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber was 13 years old when Scooter Braun, who was working for Jermaine Dupri's So So Def label at the time, found a YouTube video with Bieber singing and got Bieber's mom to send little 13-year-old Bieber over to Usher. And side note, there's some Taylor Swift drama incorporated into this because Taylor Swift claimed she was going to buy her masters from Big Machine Records, but they allegedly had already sold the company to Ithaca Holdings, which is Scooter Braun's company. So she's mad at Scooter Braun. She's mad at the Big Machine Records. It started this whole thing online, if you recall. See my last show where we talked about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce for more. Now let's talk about Diddy. Diddy had Usher under his wing when Usher was, you know, 13, 14, 15, that age frame, doing the Flavor Camp. What is that? Well, let's go to an article from Medium.com, which, to be fair, I think Medium.com is a place where anyone can write anything, I think. I could be wrong. I'm going to read you from this website. Not my words, someone else's. There have been rumors circulating online that Sean Diddy Combs gave Usher Raymond an STD when he was 15 years old. The source of these rumors is unclear, but they're nasty rumors. But some speculate that they are based on Usher's admission that Diddy used to take him to wild parties when he was a young teen. Usher was signed to LaFace Records, that's L.A. Reid, at 14 and moved to New York to work with Diddy, who was his mentor at the time. Usher said that Diddy exposed him to a different lifestyle and wanted to give him more of an edge. However, there's no evidence that Diddy gave Usher any STDs or that they had any sexual contact. Usher has been involved in several lawsuits over the years accusing him of infecting his partners with herpes, but he has denied these allegations and settled most of the cases out of court. Diddy has not commented on the rumors about him and Usher, but he has also faced legal troubles for blah, blah, blah. The shooting at the nightclub that Shine did a full term in prison and then left when he got out. The rumors about Diddy and Usher are likely fueled by sensationalism and homophobia, as some YouTube videos have suggested that Diddy forced Usher into freak-offs or had an obsession with BBCs, and we're not talking about the news media. These claims are unsubstantiated and disrespectful to both artists, who have had successful careers in the music industry and have contributed to various philanthropic causes. The rumors also ignore the fact that Usher has been married twice and has two sons, while Diddy has six children from different relationships. Let's talk a little bit about the because Diddy is in his own, since that apparently that article is needs updating, because Diddy's got a whole slew of new problems now, right? And we'll come back to that in a second. Let's talk about the herpes for a minute. I'm going to read you from Bossip. Usher has hit back at his herpes accuser's allegations that he knowingly spread the virus to her during intimate encounters last year. The singer denied transmitting the incurable virus to Laura Helm and asked a judge to dismiss Helm's suit against him. In April, Laura Helm sued the singer for negligence, fraud, battery, and infliction of emotional distress after she said she contracted herpes simplex virus following two sexual encounters with Usher in 2017. She said Usher did not tell her that he allegedly had herpes when they had sex, and after noticing symptoms and reading news articles about his alleged diagnosis, got tested and learned she'd indeed contracted the virus. Helm pointed out that to date, Usher has not denied having herpes simplex 2, and said Usher had a legal obligation to warn her of his status. She said she has suffered physically and emotionally from her diagnosis and said that Usher initiated sexual contact with her against her will. That lawsuit was dropped in 2019 after a two-year battle, and the women raised the suit to $20 million after they reached an amicable resolution. But then there's more. Quantasia Sharpton, who said the singer did not reveal his alleged herpes diagnosis before engaging in sex with her, has dropped her case. Her attorney, Lisa Bloom, recently filed to dismiss the suit. It's unclear if there was a settlement. She's one of three individuals accused of the star of exposing them to herpes. Now, this one's interesting because Quantasia, she's a bigger woman, right? And people were scoffing at this. They're like, why is Usher sleeping with her? You know? But she claims she actually has the sex tape of them. Interesting, right? And the idea of all these weird sexual improprieties comes from Usher's own statements. He went on Howard Stern's show several years ago, and he talked about how he saw this lifestyle when he was at the Flavor Camps, and he said he wasn't sure what he was looking at, but it was pretty wild, and he kept it really vague, and there were some curious things taking place, but he didn't understand it, and that he also would not tell his parents any of this stuff. And then Stern asked Usher if he'd send his own kids to a Flavor Camp, and Usher said, hell no. If you go to thethings.com, it says this. In a 2012 drunken interview, Combs, Puffy, who was partying with Usher at that time, accidentally said of his former protege, "That's my brother right there." No, I'm sorry. "That's my brother right here from day one. We used to wake up together." The interviewer started laughing at the accidental spill, but the rapper, whose arm was around Usher's shoulder, went on to remind people how young the latter was when they lived together. And I've seen that video clip. You can find it on YouTube. And in the same article, later on, when he started mentoring Justin Bieber, Usher revealed that Combs took him to parties, took him to those parties to make him rougher with more edge. That doesn't even make sense. Looking back, he said, quote, "But I'm not saying Puff was wrong. That first album was my most successful, but it launched the career I've enjoyed for 18 years since. It's helped me understand the importance of having a mentor when I'm working with Justin." Referring to Justin Bieber. Meaning, did Justin Bieber go to some weird parties too? And it sounds like an initiation. It doesn't sound like, what, they learned some valuable lesson on singing at these parties? Or did it open doors? Did they perform or observe something that some weirdo was like, okay, you do this and I'll do that. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I don't know. That's what you always hear about these industries. And Jamie Foxx gets involved here too, because we talked about him last year a few times because he had that mysterious medical issue and there was theories about clones, and it all comes from this thing that he was documenting Puff's parties in the 90s and how wild they were. So he knows where all the bodies are buried, right? And then Puff got in trouble just recently with Cassie and all these women making all these claims, and 50 Cent's working on a documentary, supposedly, about Puff Daddy. And we talked about this on one of my shows. There's a YouTube from Misty. Says, Diddy exposed for allegedly putting a hit on Jamie Foxx. And look, we're deep in the conspiracy realm, folks. So take all this with a grain of salt. And she was saying that Jamie Foxx exposed Diddy for being secretly gay on the down low, which apparently makes him really mad. Wendy Williams talked about this on Vlad TV, about how she got in trouble for talking about this stuff. And now there's this whole documentary about her coming out, about how she's, I don't know, mentally unfit or something. Like, they're trying to smear her. And then there's theories that Jamie Foxx is into these parties as well as Usher as well. I don't know. And it's weird to me because it's like, do people even care if you're gay anymore? Like, why all the secretiveness about this whole thing, you know? But Diddy, he is connected to everything hip-hop, right? This guy is less than 60 degrees of separation from Big and Tupac. And remember, he said only two people in this world can call him by his real first name of Sean. That's his mother and Jay-Z. So Jay-Z and Diddy, they are very powerful people, all right? Now there's more. I mean, do you want more gay allegations about Usher? Hollywood Street King Jackie Jasper, he busts a lot of wild stuff. I'm going to read you from his website. It seems that Usher Raymond gets around, and that old saying, 6 degrees of separation, oh, that's ironic, I just said that, more than applies to L.A. Reid and Sean Puffy Combs. That's because sources say Usher has served as a boy toy to both men. More specifically, Sean Puffy Combs has collected his fellow music mogul's leftovers. Don't believe me? Ask Jermaine Dupri. Here's some cold iced tea from an industry insider. Says, Usher Raymond has carved out quite an impressive recording career, selling over 100 million albums worldwide, but that ain't the reason he will never be broke. Usher will never be broke because he knows too many industry secrets, the kind of secrets that will do one of two things, make your ass dead or make you rich beyond your wildest dreams. Usher has so much dirt on L.A. Reid, it's not even funny. Reid used to talk on the phone around Usher, meet young boys from ATL with Usher, kick it with his homie, lover, friend, partner, Babyface around Usher, and trick off while wearing lip gloss around Usher. He wined and dined him under the guise of Usher being his golden goose. L.A. was courting that young dude. He bought Usher his first sports car, a Porsche, I believe. Shit, he damn near gave that little N-word his mansion for free. He wasn't a good role model. Then here comes Puffy to act as a mentor. Puff set him up with orgies and strippers, but really just wanted to see that young dude naked and banging groupies. Diddy hooked him up with three ways so he could get him used to being in bed with him. You know what came next? Oh, she couldn't make it this time. Oh, old girl running a little late. And don't even get me started on Jermaine Dupri's little freaky ass. Some N-words had a crack habit. JD had an ass crack habit. That N-word had strippers delivered like Jimmy John's. Freaky fat. I don't know who this insider is, but they're making me laugh. It was only a matter of time before he was broke. Usher also got the trump card of all trump cards. He knows the real deal on that Shakir Stewart situation. Now, that was from Hollywood Street King Jackie Jasper, and he's a guy who has been sort of plugged into a lot of underground hip-hop conspiracy rumor stuff, and I mean, I don't know what to believe in this stuff, but Shakir Stewart, I don't know what that story is, but if you look it up on Wikipedia, he died in November 2008. Says he was a native of Oakland, California, and he was a U.S. record executive at a number of companies, the latest being Def Jam. At the time of his death, he was the senior vice president of Island Def Jam Music Group and the executive vice president of Def Jam. And they said they found him in the bathroom with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. I don't know if he was in the bathtub or not. But anyways, I guess he was, he replaced Jay-Z at his position at Def Jam. I don't know. This the hip hop world gets pretty crazy pretty quick. So, and I don't know. I'm just reading you what I read on these websites. Okay. Let's talk about symbolism. This is more my forte. All right. Usher's got some tattoos. Particularly on his throat, which you probably don't see it unless you look it up, because it's kind of under his chin. He's got an all-seeing eye, which of course is, you know, awakened, initiated into the occult way of living. Maybe he learned it at the flavor camps. I don't know what he was doing there. Then on the back of his head, he's got a tattoo, and I'm going to read you from the tattooer Dylan Forte. He said this: I had the pleasure of tattooing the legend Usher this piece that was inspired by transformation, sacred geometry, and an ancient Berber talisman to mark the cardinal point in the sky and allow travelers to find their way across vast distances. And of course, when you're talking about tracking the sky, this goes back to the astrologers, and that's the original occult art, is astrology, the Babylonian stargazers. And a talisman is an object you charge up for magic. Sacred geometry goes back to Pythagoras, again, more occult concepts, and transformation is the whole point behind alchemy. Then he's got pentagrams on his hand and his elbow. He's got stars, and that, of course, makes sense with the sacred geometry thing, because Pythagoras, who taught sacred geometry to his disciples and initiates, they would mark their hands with pentagrams as well, and pentagrams are magical symbols, sacred geometry. That's why, if you look at the center of a pentagram, a star, you'll see a pentagon. And we have a giant pentagon in Washington, D.C. And the guy, to bring this back to UFOs and nuclear testing, the guy who was overseeing the project to build the Pentagon was Colonel Leslie Groves, who was also the guy who oversaw the Manhattan Project for the first atomic bomb. Boom. They gave us the Trinity site with the Trinity UFO crash. But Usher's an interesting dude. I mean, he's got, he knows some stuff. And there's a picture, I'll put this on my Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt, link in the show notes. There's a picture of him with Michelle Lammy. That's Rick Saturn Owens' consort. Saturn is really his middle name. We talked about him on the show many times. He made those satanic shoes of Converse, and he's chummy with Kanye West. And anyway, Usher tweeted this image, or Instagrammed it probably more so. It says, on a date, kind of nervous, with him and Michelle, who looks like a witch, straight from a from a movie. Rick Rowland's also plugged in with Jay-Z and Beyonce. He worked the Beyonce Renaissance album artwork. So this is a small group, folks. And I told you I was going to pick on Taylor Swift. Let's do that real quick. Some points I didn't hit on my Grammy show when we picked on Taylor Swift. They're already calling this the Swifty Bowl, all right, because they're trying to get the women to watch. That's why they're calling it the Swifty Bowl. But she won her 13th Grammy, and she went on and on about how 13 is her lucky number. All right. Now, there's this PDF, a book called Occult Holidays and Sabbats. No clue who the author is or if this is reputable information, okay? But it says the number 13 is considered divine by the occultists. And I looked this stuff up, and some of it does, you do see this on different websites, so I think this is true. It says the Bible assigns 13 the meaning of rebellion against constituted authority, plus the depravity that caused Satan to rebel against God. The occultist assigned 6 to represent the number of man, and the number 7 to represent the number of divine perfection. Thus, as a person climbs that Jacob's ladder towards self-perfection in the realm of the occult, the number 13 represents the state of divine perfection, self-achieved perfection, and illumination. 6 + 7 = 13. And I also want to say the Aleister Crowley Universal Hexagram has the 6 and the 7 as a symbolic of macro and microcosm. Don't quote me on that, though. And the occult calendar has 4 different 13-week periods, right? But now the Grammys, she announced her new album, which I told you, it's her 11th album. It's the album, that's the number of magic. It drops on April 19th, which in that same PDF, they talk about the importance of April 19th. It's the first day of a 13-day satanic ritual relating to fire, the fire god Baal, or Moloch, Nimrod, the sun god, also known as the Roman god, Saturn, Satan, or the devil. It's a major day of human sacrifice demanding fire sacrifice with an emphasis on children. This day is one of the most important human sacrifice day, and as such, has had some very important historic events occur on this day. And it talks about like the Battle of Lexington with the Masonic Revolutionary War coming after it. Some other things, right? David Koresh, Oklahoma City bombing, and things like that. So the idea is that Taylor Swift is releasing that album on the first day of a blood sacrifice holiday, April 19th to May 1st, you know, culminating on Beltane. Now, in conclusion, let's wrap this up. The Super Bowl has all the makings of a massive occult high-profile ritual this year. So subscribe to my show. Come back for the post-game analysis. Things keep updating, right? Like, I just was online and I saw Usher at a Mandalay Bay halftime show press conference, and he's doing this as above, so below symbol with his hands, using the Baphomet symbol, the two-fingered salute, they call it. Because the two fingers up and the two fingers below is as above, so below. I showed a video that went viral on my Instagram of Esmeralda Spalding and John Legend, and she does the same thing with the camera, and it catches her, and she's like, whoops. That's pretty crazy stuff. And on top of that, Usher's done this symbol in the past. I have another image that I dug up on my archives of him doing the same thing with the two fingers up, two fingers down, or whatever. And then behind him, there's the tessellating Masonic checkerboard of the white and black checkered sort of wall. You'd have to see it to see what I'm saying. So predictions. What's going to happen? We're going to get symbolism, folks. We're going to get symbolism. We could have fire for Taylor Swift. For Usher, he's big into those pentagrams. And let's see, we have pentagram. What do we have on the tattoos? We have pentagrams, astrology, and transformation. So we have alchemy, and alchemy lines up with both Taylor Swift and Usher because of the fire, right? Because the final stage of alchemy is the phoenix. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll go on a limb and say there's a bird, some bird symbolism of a bird transforming from the black to the white to the yellow to the red as the phoenix and rising on fire. Maybe that's what we're in for. Maybe some stars, because he's really into this astrology, pentagrams, and that kind of thing. Sacred geometry, perhaps. But we could be seeing a sort of transformation ritual. But the dark arts are all about introducing antinomianism to the masses, self-centered black magic Satanism to inflate one's ego. That's why when Jay-Z went up to receive his Lifetime Achievement Award from the Grammys, he was crying that Beyonce didn't win enough Grammys. Bro, she's already got the record by far. She's already got more than 5 times the Grammys that Madonna has. Come on, bro. This is because these people are mentally ill. They're narcissists. Everything is about them. Always. Always. It's a sick, twisted, dark arts thing. Now, who's going to win? I already told you, it's the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are going to win. That's the story they want to show us. The Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift romance. You know, and I talked about it more in that last show I did. You got to listen to that. But so much of these theories about the colors of the Super Bowl artwork, like this year it was purple and red. They thought it was the Ravens and the 49ers. But even back then, I said, no, it's not going to be the Ravens. It's going to be the Chiefs. And that's what happened. Now, the bad news is that these two teams played the Super Bowl in 2019, and we all know what happened the next year. Nothing good. All right. But I thought, let's look at that 2019 halftime Super Bowl symbolism. That was when Maroon 5 and Travis Scott were performing. And Travis Scott came down as a fallen star, pushing more of his Luciferian satanic imagery. This is before the astral world satanic symbolism. Because I've been picking on Travis Scott since 2015. With all the alchemical symbolism and Luciferian symbolism in his videos. One example I'll give you of many. He has a song called The Ends, and he says, "One eye open, Illuminati, this might be the verse that makes him drop me. I gave up on the Bible a long time ago. I hope they don't give up on me." But they depicted him falling from the sky, and I talked about it back in 2019 about how this is that fallen, the fallen angel, Luciferian symbolism. And I even talked about Project Bluebeam back then, right? We talked about the idea of Project Bluebeam and technology perfecting more and more. So I think that the symbolism that we're talking about with the birds and the pentagrams and the sacred geometry and the transformation and the phoenix quite possibly has a technological aspect to it, right? Of Project Bluebeam and things like this. And I'll put the link in the show notes if you want to listen to that 2019 episode. For all the people in the free feed there. And by the way, while I'm talking about it on the supporter feeds like Patreon VIP section, I can't post a link to the feed because it wouldn't work on your end. So only the free feed is the places I can drop the link. So you'd have to sort of. Sorry, someone's yelling at his dog. I'm on the suburban hell here. So you can see these folks don't always hide it too well, but maybe that's the point. Revelation of the method to grab people into occult practices 1 yard at a time. I'll post the links. Check them out in the show notes. Stay subscribed to the show. I'm coming back with a post-game analysis. All right, stay positive.